Some images are so powerful, they hardly need words. Photographer Harriet Logan was in Afghanistan in 1997 when the Taliban held much of the country firmly in its grip. Even so, Logan was invited deep into women's lives, though by allowing themselves to be photographed, they risked punishment, even death. Last December, she went back to find out how these women's lives had changed. Her pictures appear in a new book of photography called Unveiled, Voices of Women in Afghanistan. It's an unlikely collection, beginning with pictures the women showed her of their youth, Kabul in the 1970s, a youth of miniskirts and high heels.
When I went into all of these women's homes, they would show me their photo albums, and in their albums they had the most amazing pictures of themselves, and they looked just like you and I did, or anyone did it in the 70s, you know. They just, and that's what life was like for a lot of Kabul women, was exactly like, they had, you know, the right to vote, they had, you know, they had education, they could work. I mean, they had a completely similar lifestyle to us.
There's a lot of names in here: Akela, Zarguna, Layla. There's a picture of a 19-year-old here who you did not meet in 97, Layla. And I just love this picture. She is wearing, she's very attractive. She's wearing a sweater and blouse and necklace, and has a kind of her hair in a top knot. And there's a doll behind her whose hair is also arranged in a top knot.
Yeah. Well, Layla was is a hairdresser, and she's been a hairdresser for a long time. She's very young, but she had been... I think she said that she had learned to be a hairdresser when she was kind of 12 or something, you know, crazy. What was interesting about her was that she cut hair the entire time through the Taliban in secret, and, you know, did makeup and stuff. And she used to cut a lot of Taliban women's hair. And of course, they would arrive at her house, and she said it was quite shocking, because they would arrive and they wouldn't even wear a burqa to enter the house. So, you know, they were breaking rules all over the place, but of course it was okay for them to do that.
What is this photograph here? There's a woman in a market. huddled down in her burqa. She's literally sitting there in the dirt, as women do, particularly women who are begging, just sit in the dirt. But then she has a big boom box in front of her and a
She's selling tea, and she's using a radio and music, which of course is another thing that you see now everywhere, and that another thing that the Taliban forbid. So she was using music to sell her tea, so people would come up and, you know, listen to some music and have a cup of tea.
You really got inside people's lives, didn't you?
I think it certainly helped that two things helped. One thing, that I'd been there before, made a difference. And the other thing is that I think, as a woman working in a lot of Islamic countries, but, you know, but particularly in Afghanistan, you are able to access an incredible world that I think male journalists probably can't. You know, as you enter people's homes, and suddenly you're very much in their homes, and I went to quite a few people's homes for dinner, and it was just fantastic. But, you know, the men at that point, or the male members of each household, would kind of sit and look slightly sort of embarrassed by the whole thing, because, you know, I was there as a woman and sort of entering a woman's world.
Well, one of the most striking pictures in here is of a woman plucking her eyebrows as she's talking to you, allowing you to photograph her as she's plucking her eyebrows.
I wouldn't let anyone photograph me, but that's literally what she was doing. She was just kind of hanging out doing that.
Then you turn the page to someone like Zarguna, and immediately you're plunged into more of the sorrow that the regime of the Taliban imposed. The picture of Zarguna here from 1997 shows her with her eyes covered by her hands. It's a picture of despair, and it says, Zarguna, 1997. I met with Zarguna in a freezing cold box of a room in the house of one of her relatives. She had no heating. There was no glass in the windows. We sat underneath blankets to try to keep warm. Zarguna cried the entire time I was there. Then you turn the page, and there's a picture of Zarguna in 2001 in December. And if anything, she's still crying, and the picture's even more sad. Tell us about Zarguna.
Zarguna had been a lecturer in the Polytechnic in Kabul. So she was, you know, an educated woman giving education. And since she taught in the Polytechnic, she was given Polytechnic housing. And literally overnight, her life changed. The Taliban came in, and she lost everything. You know, not only did she lose her job, therefore the way that she supported herself and her child, but she also lost her housing. And, you know, she was forced to sell everything she owned and was living in the house of some distant relative. You know, in a sense, her life hasn't got any better now. For her, when the American bombing started, she lived very near to one of the targets, and everyone else in the flats where she lived left the flats and, you know, went somewhere safer, and she just stayed there because she'd just given up now. She just, you know, she doesn't have, you know, she has no faith in what's going to happen now. She can't possibly stand there saying, well, this government's going to be any better. And a lot of women don't really know that this government now will be any better. I mean, they've got nothing to go on in terms of, I mean, you know, they've always been let down.
What's so striking about her is she had been a physics teacher mm-hmm. at the Kabul Polytechnic, had a good salary, a good life. When you meet her in 97, she's already having a sense that her life is vanishing. It's only 4 years later. And you write, she had aged far more than 4 years. Her whole body was shaking and her hands were swollen and blue. She had moved with great difficulty, had lost an enormous amount of weight, and had been unable to do anything these last 4 years, and is basically waiting to
die. She's waiting to die. I mean, I put my arms around her when I walked into her flat. And there was nothing of her. And as soon as I touched it, she felt like she'd break. I mean, she was just, you know, shaking, and just desperate. I mean, it was horrendous seeing her again. It was totally heartbreaking.
She gives you something.
Yeah. And as I was leaving, she, you know, whenever you go into an Afghan house, they will always make you tea, and they bring you little kind of bowls with sweets and nuts and all these things in it. And she didn't even have the money for that. And she then got into a terrible state about that, you know, that she didn't even have this. And, you know, and then as I was leaving, she put a hairband on me and just said, you know, I'll never see you again. You know, I am going to die now. And that's it. It's the end of my life.
And gave you the band she was wearing around
her
own hair.
Yeah.
Do you feel, as a photographer, being allowed into these private spaces, that your photographs can take us a place that war reporting in and of itself cannot? I mean,
I think it's fantastically important. I mean, I'm not kind of blowing my own whistle or anything. In a sense, what happens with news journalism is that we kind of run through stuff quite fast, and, you know, we're sort of involved in a story, and then we move to the next. And quite often it's very hard to really get a sense of, you know, of the lives behind the people who, you know, what is that news story about? You know, who are those people whose lives were actually kind of...
Because,
you know,
the news moves on and then people have to come and make dinner.
Exactly, and the news really does move on, and in a greater sense, if the news moves on very fast from Afghanistan and we totally forget about it, then there's every chance it'll go back to some, you know, the son of Taliban could quite easily be born again, without a doubt. And, you know, if we want to sort of stand here saying, you know, isn't it terrible what the Taliban did, and, you know, and being kind of interested, then our interest has to last longer than the news story does. And we need to, you know, therefore, the kind of, I think, to have a commitment that goes further than just, you know, a quick kind of turnaround is really important. And I think that these women really, really wanted their stories told. I mean, and clearly in 97, they took a very, very large risk to tell those stories. You know, they for those women to uncover their faces and allow me to photograph them in 97 was an extremely, extraordinarily brave thing to do. And when I kept saying to the women in 97, you know, are you sure you want to do this? At the end of the day, when they kept saying, yes, we do, you know, you have to tell our story, because if you don't tell it, no one will know. And, you know, so then they entrusted me with something, and it was important that I carried that, you know, those words out, I suppose.
Harriet Logan, these are amazing pictures, and you've done remarkable work, and thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Harriet Logan, her book is called Unveiled: Voices of Women in Afghanistan.